I think we miss spirituality today, mm-hmm. and it's more a question of spirituality than religious things. Mm-hmm. That's why I try to gather different rituals or beliefs in different cultures to try to create places of ritual, but in a universal way.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.
Today's guest is French sculptor Juliette Monchamp. Welcome, Juliette.
Thanks.
So my main question always in this conversation is, how did you get into art? Like, when did the possibility of making art and also making art as a professional artist occur in your life and practice?
When I was a child, I was playing violin and piano. And then when I was a teenager, I couldn't stop drawing. And a friend of mine told me about a preparation class for exams to the public art schools in France. Mm-hmm. So I told my parents, at this moment I was studying science, and I told my parents I really wanted to try it. And if it didn't work after this year, I will come back to science. But so my parents supported me a lot in mm-hmm. this choice. So I did this preparation year, and I passed the two exams of, like, for me, it was the best art school in Paris. So it was Les Beaux-Arts de Paris, mm-hmm. Fine Arts, mm-hmm. and Les Arts Décoratifs de Paris. And so my parents told me, okay, let's go. You have something, so you have to do that. And this is how I met art. It's actually really two different schools, because Les Beaux-Arts learn you how to be an artist. It's like a free way of teaching. It learned me how to dig into myself to find really a personal reflection. Mm-hmm. Rather than in Les Arts Décoratifs, it's more technical learning. So this is a place where I learned how to be a set design. So I did a lot of theater sets, actually. Mm-hmm. And I learned...
So first you came from theater.
Yeah, so I come from theater and cinema also. I did a lot of monumental sets. It's how I learned how to do plans, 3D, but also how to follow a production plan and budget. So all this luggage for me is really important today.
But it's interesting. So it's not common that people study both.
No, it's not common, because I couldn't choose between the two. So it's really special. So I didn't say to my teachers that I was in the two schools. Mm-hmm. So I had like 45 hours of class per week. Mm-hmm. So it was completely crazy. And during 5 years, I was going to Les Arts Décoratifs, and in the afternoon I was going in Les Beaux-Arts. Mm-hmm. So I had like two brains and two ways of speaking about my work. Mm-hmm. And it took me time before to get in sculpture. Mm-hmm. I think my first sculpture, it was at the during the last year of Les Beaux-Arts de Paris. Mm-hmm. So in 2018, mm-hmm. so like 7 years ago.
And did you have any role model in the family or in your surrounding as an artist who you sort of lived up to?
No, my mother is a pianist, so... Mm-hmm.
Professional pianist.
Yes, professional mm-hmm. pianist. And my father is a financial director, mm-hmm. so really strict. It's not they are not coming from the art scene, so I had to learn on myself. So I have no one in the art scene in my family.
I mean, art scene, yes, but music.
Yes,
art,
music.
But not
yes.
visual or, not or visual. Plastic, art, yeah. art de plastique. Yeah. And tell me, so I understood right, rather at the end of Beaux-Arts, you've started to formulate your own language. So it was not, because what I'm amazed by your work is that it has a very articulate language, which I think is very innovative and new, but also sort of reflects on elements in art history. But that came later, right? It wasn't always like this, so to speak. You developed it.
Yeah, at the beginning. My first sculpture was for my diploma in Les Beaux-Arts de Paris. And actually, the first sculpture was in wax. Mm-hmm. So everything started at this point. And so the piece was named La Veille au Candelo, like candlelight vigil in English, I think.
Candlelight?
Vigil, like veillé in French. Mm-hmm. And it was a man-sized steel cube, but covered with 300 kilos of wax. And you can turn around of it. And we had like 120 wicks that we can lit every morning and turn off every evening. And in fact, this piece is really important because it's the first one in wax, and there was everything inside. So I think I had the chance to produce this work earlier mm-hmm. in my mm-hmm. career, because after I had just had to watch it and like follow all the threads of this piece. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that I exhibit in the Palais des Beaux-Arts. Mm-hmm. So it's the museum of the school, actually, yeah. quite famous. But no one could be here every day to lit the wicks. So I told them, no worries, I will be there every day and I will lit myself all the wicks every morning. Mm-hmm. And this is how I was there every day. Mm-hmm. And so I met a lot of people. I had a lot of feedbacks about my work. And for me, it was really strong because I think it's the first time I realized that I could convey strong emotions to people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, also during this exhibition, I met a man, maybe you know him. It's the name is Hendrik Driessen. Mm-hmm. He was the former director of De Pont Museum, a big museum in Netherlands.
Beautiful museum. Mm-hmm.
And I think he knew your father because mm-hmm. he told me.
It's a former fabrication hall.
Yeah, it's a really big museum. And actually, he was passing by in Les Beaux-Arts de Paris because he was working with the direction. Mm-hmm. And he asked to meet me because he felt in love with the work. Mm-hmm. And so we met there because I was there every day, so I just came upstairs and we spoke together, and he asked me to participate to a biennale in Netherlands. The name was Hope. Mm-hmm. And he told me that there was Berlin de Debrouckère, Biviola, Anish Kapoor in the show, and I was okay, it's a dream, I think. And 1 year later I exhibited in the same room as Berlin de and as Biviola, mm-hmm. Who are for me kind of idols mm-hmm. when I was younger. So I think in this exhibition, I met myself and mm-hmm. I was telling myself for the first time, okay, I think I have to quit the theater scene and give all my time and energy to the art scene, because I think it's something that you have to do every day if you want.
Because you were not decided at this point.
Yeah, I was on both.
Stage design or...
Yeah, I was earning my life with theater sets or sets for museum, you know, or set design for brands. And it was risky for me to say, okay, I stopped okay. this. And I made this choice because my boyfriend, who is now my husband, mm-hmm. asked me to make the choice. Like he told me, if you have to choose, and if I tell you, you will be so happy in the booth, what do you choose?
Yeah.
And I tell him I would be an artist. So yeah.
Ah, okay.
It was 6 years ago.
But I guess also it's not only to be in dialogue with a spectator and the visitor. I guess also because you spend every day with your work, no? Mm-hmm. It becomes a, and also what you mentioned with DuPont. It's interesting. Yeah. I remember I visited the space. They have a focus on physical experience rooms, right? Yeah. That you have to, which are also something we work on a lot in the gallery. That's why we built this church. I think you have to not only see, but also holistically connect with the work, no?
Yeah.
In the full presence.
Yeah.
But tell me, I understand it was a real candle.
Yeah, it was like a monumental candle.
Yeah. It's
120 wicks. So you had more than 100 points mm-hmm. where you can lit, and so there were like 100 flames that were melting the wax,
yeah.
And so it was revealing a structure
below.
Which was inside,
yeah.
And it was a pattern of a labyrinth,
mm-hmm.
A sacred pattern from Birmania. It was a tattoo, in fact. So. So yes, the dialogue between the metallic structure and wax was here at the beginning.
Okay.
And then I developed other things like these works, mm-hmm. which is the following, which followed that. But there is always a dialogue between the skeleton and the wax, which is for me like a skin, but like an architectural clothes that I put or envelop onto my metallic
which
work.
You only to a certain extent can control, right? Like it has its own behavior.
Yeah.
You have an idea how it's moving.
It's a process. So I know quite well how it will go, but I don't know every stalactite. There is always surprises with this material.
But so when you have 120, mm-hmm. how's it called? Litz,
in
German. So. Once you start, you finish, the first one is off again, right? So it's a permanent performance.
Actually, we lit you have one on four. Mm-hmm. So you have one lit and three turn off. And every day we restart to have a line, you know, like that. So you don't have something down, you know, you have the same line.
Ah, okay.
And everything is going down like that. Like
but you got rid of the lit. In this work, there's none, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah. In this work, there is no.
Okay, so that you have developed away from it.
Yes.
And tell me, because I mean the candle as a symbol in art history has a very religious connotation too, no?
Yes, but what interests me is that the candle is, for me, something really universal that you can find in, I think, all the cultures in different times. Mm-hmm. So it is present in a lot of different religious mm-hmm. things. And it's a symbol of hope and light for everybody, I think. And that's why, for me, it's a really special object, the candle. It fascinates me a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how did you get in touch? Like, how did you find the material wax in your practice?
How did I get it?
Yeah, like how did you come across it for this first work?
For this first work, I called a lot of French factories who made a lot of paraffin wax, and mm-hmm. I asked them for 1 ton of wax. Mm-hmm. So yeah, at the first time, yes, I received 1 ton, and now I think I have 5 tons.
Mm-hmm. No, I meant more conceptually. Like, because I understand finding your language and your path, and then how did you conceptually came to that material to incorporate it in your sculpture?
Alors, I wanted to create walls that can melt mm-hmm. During the show. So I was looking for a material that is near from a skin that can, the wall skin, you know. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you don't have any choices in materials. Like wax was the first idea I had because it's not so expensive. I was at school, so I had to find something like accessible, you know. Mm-hmm. And wax, for me, it was completely crazy because we can project a lot of human beings inside because it is used for faces or for mm-hmm. human body, not so much in an architectural way. And there is, I think, a strong feeling of empathy mm-hmm. inside this.
And warmth too, no?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also the thing, the fantastic thing is that we can remelt it infinitely. Mm-hmm. So
it's not consumed. It's not.
You lose a little bit, like 10%. Yeah. When I have a work that
transform it again. It's
and okay. then I take it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything is going back to my tank. Mm-hmm. I refilter every small dust, mm-hmm. every hair, and mm-hmm. and then the wax is completely clean, and I can reuse it for the future exhibitions.
Mm-hmm. And the color is. Always like the skin color.
Yes. Because at the beginning, I give that color to all my tones of wax, and then
you control the color.
Yeah.
It's not naturally like
no.
this. So usually it's white or
it's white, transparent white.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
So I put some. It's oil painting uh-huh. to color it because you need to have something oily inside. So the mix is. Well.
Ah, okay. And so it's an artistic decision that
exactly.
it's this presence. Okay.
Yes.
Ah, okay. So you experimented to find the right tone.
New tone, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This tone goes through all the work.
Yes, exactly.
Ah, okay. Yeah, interesting because, I mean, you could also use silicon, but silicon doesn't have this aura, right? I think wax has an aura.
Yes, wax in the visual things, it's shiny, but also really matte. You have both, and silicone, I think you don't have the same feeling. Like, it's a really special, I don't know, yeah, matte aspect, I think. And
silicone is more cold, no? More technical.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, I mean, the metal structure.
Yeah.
Is this referencing to... Because here, the one work I saw by you, which I was very impressed by, is this intervention you did in a church, mm-hmm. where you did a walk through, mm-hmm. like pavilion, experiential room, I would say.
The cross, you mean?
Yes, the cross, which I think is interesting because you have these multi-layered brick and mortar, but a sacred space, but then also the metal, the wax, you know, it's like all these pure, almost like brutalistic materials.
Yeah.
And how do you find this shape? Is this a window or?
Yeah. In fact, as I have a lot of requests for historical places or iconic places, often I made the structure resonating with the architecture where I will exhibit it. So, for example, at the moment I have a show in Florence where I show a lot of stained glass. It's not a real stained glass, but the wax is like the glass. And so the structure is coming from this show because it was a church before and with a Baroque spirit. And you had before stained glass like that. So I take the same drawing as the former windows. I just kept the lines. Then I did it in metal and then I envelope that with my wax. So it's coming from a Baroque spirit, this one. And it's an homage to this church.
But how, what role plays sacred spaces or religion into your practice?
I think it has an influence on the shape of the structure a lot.
Yeah.
Because when it's not in the places where I exhibit, I look at like antique temples or sacred architecture and I draw a lot of different lines, just like you don't have the walls, but just the lines of the volumes. And these lines create the metal structure after.
But are you religiously socialized in your upbringing?
No, I am a Christian, but I'm not going to church at all.
And you weren't raised in that sort of context?
Yeah, I have more like a universal vision, and I think spirituality, I think we miss spirituality today. And it's more a question of spirituality than religious things. That's why I try to gather different rituals or beliefs in different cultures to try to create places of ritual, but in a universal way.
And is the making of the work a ritual too? Like the process of
yes.
Because like, tell us how first you build the metal rod. And then how do you get the wax in this dynamic into it?
Yeah. Alors, it's kind of ritual because all my processes are in the repetition. And I think repetition is kind of ritual in the process of art. So, for example, the process here is I pour liquid wax on flat table. So I have a puddle of 2 millimeter thickness.
Like a pool.
Yeah, like a pool, exactly like that. And then I am waiting for like 3 minutes before I peel it off on my arms. So I have a like soft puddle on my arms.
Almost like a sheet.
Yeah, exactly. And then I go
again,
quickly.
Again, a bit Christian too, no? Like the, you know.
It's really...
the Jesus, you have like a...
kind of linceul, we say in French. Yeah. Yes, and it's like a fabric, but a warm fabric.
Yeah.
It's like skin, in fact. It's really, it's perfectly, the temperature is perfect, like, I think 38 degrees or something, like the body. Yeah. And then I go quickly on my metallic structure and I have between 2 and 4 minutes to place it and to make the folds and to follow gravity and then voilà. So if I don't like the drapery,
you have to do
it goes back to my tank and I redo. So, for example, sometimes I do like 10 turns before to have the good one, and sometimes it's more quick.
But I guess you get better and better, no?
Yeah, now I am, because
like a master.
I did a lot, so And my assistants helped me a lot, but every shred of wax, it's me.
Because once it gets hard, you can't control it anymore, right? I mean, you can't
exactly.
You have no influence on the surface, or can you?
A little bit, maybe. I can restore some things after it, but when I do it, yes, you have not so much. When it's cool, I think it's
because of floating energy.
Yeah,
I mean, it's very much about the behavior of getting hard in the process, and then once it's there, you can't influence it anymore.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But now I know how to restore some things, because you always, sometimes at the end you just want to polish a place, but you can't change the general form.
Yeah.
It's like that.
And in the wax itself, there's nothing in there, right?
No, nothing.
Safe holding.
It's 100% of wax.
Uh-huh. And these other structures, there you rebuild them and you dip them in wax again when you do these big installations.
Yeah, so this, it's the part of my work with draperies. So yeah, it's this technique. And then I have another technique for evolving works.
Yeah.
So the one with candles. And this, it's another technique. So for example, here we can see a panel.
Yeah.
Who is coming from an installation that I presented last year in a French abbey.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you had like 33 different panels like that. So this mm-hmm. one is the number 29.
Mm-hmm.
And together they were fixed and they created a Latin cross inside the Latin abbey.
Yeah.
And every panel has been dipped more than 50 times in a hot bath of liquid wax. So it's actually the same technique as ancestral factories making candles. We called it dipping technique or plunging technique.
Mm-hmm.
So between every dipping, you earn milliliter after milliliter. Mm-hmm. So the wicks become candles. So here we can see there are like 11 lines. I don't know if you can see there. And these are candles. So you can lit here.
Oh, they could be lit.
They can be lit.
But you don't lit them.
Not here, but normally, yes, you can lit when you want.
Ah, so when they're in a bigger construction?
Exactly. Everything was lit. So at the beginning, okay, you had the wax everywhere. So yeah, like that until the top.
And then
so you saw it's a work entirely in wax. But during 2 months, every morning we lit the candles and the wax is going
down.
And revealing the metal pattern that you can see.
Yeah.
So it's you can't see the work the same every day.
Uh-huh.
It's changing a lot at the end.
Because it's running down
exactly
on its own sort of legs, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. And then at the end you discover the drawing which is inside.
Yeah.
And it was a bouquet of roses, like if you had lying down like an offrand in the church.
Mm-hmm.
So every panel has a different pattern, but together it's a huge pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we had like 400 wicks, so 400 flames.
But it's interesting, then even the wax, which ran down, you can reuse it again.
Yes, exactly.
And then you put it in a basin.
Yeah.
And then you dip the structure in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for example, this work, I kept it and yeah, I am looking for a new place to exhibit it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will be the same material, the same wax that has been used here in the abbey
yeah,
for the next exhibition.
But the panels, they go individual and in a long...
Exactly.
So both?
Both.
They go independent, but in a big installation.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Interesting. And... but these work can't go, they can't go outside, right? Because you also did outside sculptures.
It's, it's quite solid because the wax is supported by the steel inside.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, outside, I mean, sun can deform a little bit, but mm-hmm, not so much on this one. They are really solid inside, and outside it's more sensitive, yes, because of the heat on the steel part, not so much on the wax part.
Yeah, and I remember you told me that that the sun, interestingly, when the work is confronted with sunlight, it's not so much the wax which reacts to the sunlight, yes, it's more the metal grid.
Yes.
How is that the case? Because it warms up, or
yes,
like the heat comes from inside, not so much from the outside surface?
No, because the sun, when it touches metals, even if it's inside, when it's outside,
mm-hmm,
I think it goes to 100 degrees, I think. Like, you know, you touch metal, it's like...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's why wax is really solid with sun, but mm-hmm, the steel is heating
mm-hmm
outside.
And where is the shape, the inside? Because it's first, it's hidden. You can't really identify sort of the metal drawing.
Yes.
And where is the motif coming from?
Alors, it's a, yeah, it's me. I draw all the pattern like from my mind. In fact,
okay.
I was watching a lot of roses. Mm-hmm. Like I had a bouquet in my studio, and the pattern begins with roots, and then you have thorns, and then it's going to be flowers inside the nave.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's my drawing.
But the drawing is only complete in a whole.
Yes.
Because
yes.
So only the detail is abstract, no? Relatively abstract.
Yeah, yeah. When you see just one, it's more abstract because it's a real monumental scale. But you can see here there is a big rose.
Yeah, but still, it goes independently.
Yes.
One. Okay.
Yeah.
And how many motifs did you do like this?
33.
In
33 together, it's one. Yeah.
And how many big ones did you create so far? Only this one monumental one.
Just one, but yeah. I plan to do twice because I would like to sell individual panels,
mm-hmm.
and keep one in the entire. I want to have one fully, and mm-hmm. and also have a second edition of it
of
individual.
Panels.
Yes.
And tell me, how does figuration and abstraction sort of play along? Because with these smaller elements here, they are clearly abstract, no?
Yes.
Or do they have also a figurative element hidden?
No, it's completely abstract.
Yeah. And so only in these large works, or, I mean, somehow this has a sort of a connotation of figuration too.
Yes.
No? Because usually in the church window, you have all these Kreuzgang figures, no?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But how is figuration and abstraction balanced?
It's a hard question because it's really inconscient in my mind.
Yeah, it comes subconsciously.
Yes.
Yeah. Like the motif is free. It doesn't, you don't reference to the place or to a...
No, I knew that there were a lot of roses in the garden of the place, for example. So that's why I had the idea of a bouquet of roses.
Mm-hmm.
And also it was a Cistercian abbey. So you had a rosas on the oculus.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to pay homage to this architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And also because roses symbolically are quite strong because mm-hmm. it means eternal jeunesse,
mm-hmm.
eternal young. And then, yes, I just drew. I think for this work, it's the first time I was in figurative thing.
Mm-hmm. Is this something, but I mean,
but
figurative hidden, right?
Yes, because
yeah.
Now it's quite abstract because
yeah.
of the monumental scale.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me, I thought that was interesting. In your signature, it said artist...
Plasticien.
Plasticien.
Yeah.
And what does it mean?
In France, we say that for artists who are working with materials, and so no video, no photo, but... mostly are sculptors.
Is this an important distinction for you to sort of differentiate you from new media, so to speak?
I don't know. It's a good question. Maybe, yeah.
So you like to be anachronistic in the choice of materials?
Yes.
And how come is that? Because it's a bit against the trend, maybe, no?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe I am I don't know.
How is art teaching in France? Like in Germany, we have one professor, and sometimes they can be very dominating and
mm-hmm.
reproduce a lot of mini plea
mm-hmm.
Artists. How is it in France? You have one. I think it's more different, no?
In Les Beaux-Arts, you have one teacher also.
Yeah.
So it's. But actually, I had different teachers, and I think I built me alone. And also, before, I was looking a lot of things in art, and today I'm not watching things.
Mm-hmm.
Like before, I saw a lot. And today, I don't have this need, you know. I mm-hmm. am like I am following my own path.
Mm-hmm. And intuition.
Yes.
But what were there influences which are worth mentioning?
My influences are often are it's coming from different things. But firstly, I have a lot of research on technical aspects. So, for example, I spend my time to watch how candles are made all around the world. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there is a tool or a gesture or an accident in a studio of someone, and it gives me an idea for the next piece. Mm-hmm. But I have also I read a lot of anthropological stories. Mm-hmm. So, for example, about sacred objects or a dance or a gesture that are produced by superstition. So, mm-hmm. all these stories influence me a lot. And I think also theater set had a great inspiration for me. Yes, I have a small story. So, for example, like 10 years ago, I was watching a theater show. It was FC Bergman. It is a Belgian company. Mm-hmm. And it was in La Grande Halle de la Villette in Paris. And they built a really big theater set. It was the reconstitution of a museum room, and the audience was seated inside. Mm-hmm. And all the museum room was falling apart like a ruin, mm-hmm. during the show. Mm-hmm. And it was like 24 meters high, mm-hmm. the set. It was really incredible. And at the end, you had like a shred of the tapestry of the set that unhooked from the ceiling, mm-hmm. and that was falling down really slowly until the floor. Mm-hmm. And it was like it was like if the wall was losing its skin. Mm-hmm. And this event was for me like the most beautiful thing I ever seen, I think, in, mm-hmm. theater. Mm-hmm. And this event gave me the idea to speak about the skin of the walls, for example. Mm-hmm. So I have really different influences. Mm-hmm. And in the art scene, I have watched a lot of great artists as Urs Fischer or Berlin de Debrouiller or Anish Kapoor, like huge artists, yeah. or Anselm Kiefer also. Mm-hmm. I think those artists give me...
inspiration.
Yes, inspiration.
And you said before you were doing also stage design, because I think in France the fashion industry plays a big role, mm-hmm. because it also has a bit of a connotation of... But did that... You worked in that field?
No, I never worked... I had a lot of requests from brands today, yeah. to make a partnership, mm-hmm. with my drapes technique, but I always said no. Mm-hmm. Maybe one day I will do, but I am waiting the good one, you know. Mm-hmm. If I have to do, mm-hmm. it has to has sense for me.
Yeah.
And yes, there is a strong connection between the fashion, and because the people see clothes, and yes, it's interesting to make the connection.
Yeah, I wonder also why, because I mean, it's not really something which I think is used in cosmetics, but I guess because of the skin and the,
exactly.
softness, the physical presence. Femininity maybe. Mm. But take us also a little bit on the evolution and history on wax, because I guess it comes originally from beeswax, but then this is artificial, like, because this is not beeswax, right?
Yeah, this is paraffin, so it's petrol. And it's coming from the earth, but it's more artificial than the beeswax. It's another mix.
So it's... Erdöl, what is it? It's oil, right? Like
it's oily, but yeah, it's oil.
It's like fossil.
Exactly.
Yes. But how is the process? How is it becoming this? Because when you use it, you get it in blocks, no?
I don't know. I have to know about that, but I don't know how they extract it from the earth, and I don't know what is the process to give me like a rectangular.
And what is it used for usually?
A lot in cosmetics, because you have a lot of wax in balms or, mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. Also in alimentary things, because it protects aliments. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, in wax, it's really a funny thing, because it's fragile, but also really strong, mm-hmm. Because it's used for preserving artworks, for preserving furniture, preserving also alimentary things.
Yeah.
But here we can see, oh, it's fragile. But in fact, no, it's really strong, you know. And this ambivalence between the both, I think it's really the interesting thing inside it.
Soft and hard, yeah.
Yes.
And how is the preservation? Like, is it, I mean, it's like a painting, I guess, no? From
yes.
the resistance.
It's quite the same. Because yes, I worked with chemists to find a good recipe. So we found a wax which doesn't stick to dust. So it's really simple to clean it. So you have just to, I don't know the name, like with a plume or something, and all the dust off.
So it doesn't catch that dust, yeah?
Yes, it's not sticky, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's a special mix with a wax that has a point of fusion higher than a candle. Mm-hmm. So it's 80 degrees instead of 60 degrees for a classic candle. Mm-hmm. So when it's for 40 degrees, like ambient, it doesn't move at all. I think even 50, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And also, I put a UV absorber inside, so the color doesn't change with time.
Ah.
So the three things, yes, I think are quite important for conservation.
Ah, okay, so it's quite elaborate.
Yes.
And you put a lot of...
And I made a lot of tests, a lot of
research. But the UV protection is inside. There's no vanish.
It's inside,
right?
No.
Which is important because that's why it has its aura, no?
It's really important because if you put something on wax, it closes the wax. You know, the wax needs to breathe.
Yeah.
And you can't put anything on wax. It's really an error. Mm-hmm. Like you have to let it breathe.
Yeah. And so, what's your plans for the near future?
I continue my projects, but I have different things at the moment. But I am waiting for different confirmations.
Uh-huh.
But mostly are in France for next year, and it's in monumental and historical monuments.
Yeah.
But I am waiting because we are working about a proposition.
And to have the flames in Beaux-Arts was not a problem.
No. In Les Beaux-Arts, it was not a problem because I think it was the school. So it was, they didn't, as I was there every day, you know, they trust me. In l'Abbaye de Beaulieu, it was quite difficult because it's a monument historical.
Yeah. And
so we had to, because in France, flames are interdite.
Yeah. Forbidden.
Yes, forbidden in museums.
Yeah.
So we asked for a derogation. So the mayor of the village, after months and months of waiting, she told, okay, I agree with the project of Juliet and I support it. And so we could do that. And also it was a mineral place.
Mm-hmm.
So, so they were confident. And we just put someone, in French, we say un feutier. It's the name of the people who are taking care about candles. Like, for example, in churches or, you know, they entertain.
Yeah.
So this man was there every day. And so every morning he was lit some candles there.
And how important is the heat it generates? Is it an element too? Because the candles have quite a high... they produce quite some energy, no?
No, we didn't feel heat.
Okay. Yeah.
It smells a lot, like it's really good. It smells quite well. And you have a little bit of like light, not smoke, but, you know, brume, but quite soft. And but outside, when you were coming from outside, you smell like the good smell of the wax. And no. Not so much heat, I think. No, it was.
But it's quite complex because I would have liked to have this show travel here to the main space.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes. So how do you install it? You need the basin of wax in the space when you assemble.
No, the work arrives complete. Like you receive this, but it's the same as downstairs, but everywhere. So it's like that, in fact. Like this part, and then I can show people where are the wicks, and you make as you want after, like you, it's like classic candles, and you can lit one here every day, and the other day this, and it's classical candles, so it's quite.
Okay, so you don't need to prepare on site.
No, it's just like a feu d'artifice, you know, like
okay,
everything is ready.
Yeah, I see.
Like a candle, it's really the same thing.
But it's quite intense labor. In the studio, to prepare.
Yes.
Yeah. Because but then the individual panels are not, they are not overlaid.
No, you have to fix, yes, on the plate here.
Yeah.
There is a system, an elaborate system.
Yeah.
So it's perfectly aligned.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the comment dire, le cadre.
And this is an actual result of the performance sculpture, so to speak.
I did not understand.
So the result here on the floor,
yeah.
This is, it came from the
exhibition. Yeah, it came from this.
And you can...
And you can lit when you want. And then at the end, you have a lot of stalactites down, yes.
But also you can maintain it, which yes. I think is quite surprising.
Yes, yeah. Also. Yeah.
And then this stays as it is.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're not going to... Because it's...
No, if I sell it, I can sell it like this, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
If someone wants, we put wax, I can do it.
Yeah.
We feel free to do what we want, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, but I like that the result actually comes from that exhibition.
Yes, yes.
You know, that it sort of captures, has a lot to do with time.
Yeah.
And the actual presence in that context.
Yeah, and also knowing that the wax that you can see as a story, that it's coming from the abbey, that is the same material. It's a strong and important thing, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beautiful.
But I have to really think about this exhibition here, how we have to, we have a lot of things to think, I think.
Yeah, I think it would be so super in the... You know, in the context of these, because the walls are, they're not painted. There's a grid, there's a metal grid.
Yeah.
And you see the lines, that's because of the scaffolding. And then they just threw the
concrete.
The stucco concrete on the metal grid. And I think it would be very, I would love to understand how the experience is to walk in a grid of a grid with all these like sort of natural materials of wax and concrete and stucco and metal.
Yeah, it's strong.
Yeah. And flames and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe one day.
Mm. I hope.
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you so much for taking the time
talking
to me. And I'm excited to see what else will come up.